If you have a child with epilepsy, the last thing you want to do is go to Colorado and buy a bunch of indica that's really high in THC to give to that child. It's the wrong medicine, right? Whereas if you have a PTSD soldier coming back from Afghanistan, he might really benefit from some of that. So you really have to look at the plant, look at what it's producing, and see how you can use it in the medical field.
Hey, it's Nate DeSaro, and welcome to Titans of Industry, the podcast where I talk to industry leaders and innovators who are at the top of their game and leading the pack in their fields, uncovering some of the best stories in today's business landscape. In this episode, I sit down with Brad Fawcett, co-owner and co-CEO of Green Remedies Group, a cannabis cultivation and refinery company rooted in Arkansas. Brad talks about the difference between hemp and marijuana, how he consults with organizations all over the country to bring consistency and quality to the industry, and how his PhD in soil chemistry gives him an advantage to create some of the best and most beneficial strains of cannabis to meet vastly different medicinal needs. From CBD products to cannabis solutions for your pet, you will love this conversation covering all things green. And now let's get to the episode. But before we do, it's important to know that whether you're a small business owner or the face of a multi-billion dollar industry, your organization has a great story to tell, and Content Titan wants to help you tell it. We are a digital content creation powerhouse built for the 21st century, providing all-in creative, strategic, production, post-production, and distribution services for a 360-degree, 24/7 world. In our world, Titans are passionate, creative doers. They have the experience to take your project from start to finish, minimizing your involvement so you can focus on what matters most, running your business. So if you're ready to take your content strategy and production to the next level, our Titans are ready to help. Now here's my conversation with Brad Fawcett. Well, Brad, thank you for jumping on the podcast with us. I'm excited about this one, our Titan of Cannabis, as I like to call it. Just walk me through the process. How did you end up in this role that you're in right now, which is kind of an interesting story as well. So we'll get to that. But how'd you get into the cannabis world?
Oh, well, thanks for having me. Well, it's a really long story. I had an interest in agriculture as a kid, and always wanted to be in agriculture. And when I was in college, really focused on soils and row crop production. I actually got my master's degree in soil chemistry, and most of it was revolving around rice, because here we are in rice country. You know, it's college, so there's a lot of cannabis in college. And I ended up getting kind of involved with a lot of the cannabis back then. And a lot of people over time started coming to me and asking me for pain management, end of life care, you know, just trying to smooth out the surfaces, you know, of the pain that they had to deal with every day. And I think that's really where, you know, my start and my interest in it started.
So master's degree in soil management, or what was
it? Soil chemistry.
Soil chemistry. And that took you into the agriculture world,
yeah.
Working in the rice industry.
So I was in rice, and I got a job with Gerber Foods and started working out in Colorado. And of course, cannabis is really big in Colorado. And then I came back to Arkansas, and I worked for, you know, a Fortune 500 company here. And it was a great experience, but I was still involved in cannabis the entire time. I still had people calling me going, you know, I have lung cancer and I can't smoke this joint that I got from my buddy. What can I do with it? And I would help them make brownies or help them make gummies or, you know, get it to where they could get the medicine that they needed. Most of these people did not want to take a lot of the really strong prescriptions. And this was something that was mild and manageable for their everyday life. So, I mean, again, it was all agriculture. You know, I really loved looking at the bird's eye view of agriculture and seeing if we could fine tune the agricultural process here and make it a little better. What I really wanted to do was reduce pesticide and herbicide use and really dial in the fertilizers, you know, through a variable rate and use drones to help do that, you know. We were doing LIDAR and multispectral and hyperspectral analysis and overlaying these orthomosaics of a multispectral analysis over a LIDAR image. And by doing so, we could fine tune our data points to where there was almost zero error. So we could see within centimeters, and we could see bugs, we could see diseases, and we could see them on big levels because we were up in the sky. And it wasn't just drones. It was drones, planes, helicopters, satellites. It was any kind of data I could get. It was really more data analytics. Drones were just a great tool for it.
Fascinating. So somebody who in college learned a lot about soil chemistry, maybe grew some cannabis in the basement, and ends up doing aerial surveillance and data analysis for
correct
some of the large, that's an interesting journey for sure.
So in 2014, I was at the Cannabis Cup in Denver, and I competed and I did really well. And then later on, when Arkansas Medical started coming up, we applied. We started that venture in 2016, so 4 years ago. And we've got a group, and we have a dispensary license that we're hoping will be issued soon here in Arkansas, down in the Hot Springs area. We're in the top 40. I have picked up several consulting gigs, and some of those are with the cultivation, some of the cultivators here. I also deal with a lot of the cultivators in Oklahoma, Colorado, Nevada, California, Arizona. I'm kind of all over the place these days. I even have business down in Baja, Mexico for the CBD side because it's really starting to take off in Mexico as well.
I love it. All right, so 2016, big year in Arkansas. The applications become available. But nationally, where was the national scope of medical cannabis and that whole industry at the time?
So right then, you know, you kind of had that transition on the West Coast from medical to recreational, you know, and we're still trying to catch up down out here with the medical. And, you know, my goal and my focus has always been medical more so than recreational. But cannabis is cannabis. So, I mean, even on the recreational side, it has its benefits, especially from a tax revenue perspective and adding jobs and a new form of business, right?
Like, I lived in Colorado until 2012, and it had just become legal there. And they were obviously on the front end of that.
They were, well. Yeah. Them in California were the front. Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of give me just a brief timeline of, you know, the front end innovators in the states that took it first, and then kind of where we're at here in Arkansas now and the rest of the nation.
Wow, the whole industry is shifting, you know. I mean, the more and more momentum this industry gets, the bigger, you know, the bigger players are starting to get involved. The mom and pops are starting to kind of go away, and it's a very money intensive, you know, industry. It takes a lot to grow and secure and manage and comply with the regulations. So it takes a lot of money. It takes the right people that can monetize that whole system. And so the mom and pops are kind of going away. They can't really compete in some of this. I know some of the guys that I consult with out in California, they were looking at $1 million, you know, a license renewal, just for the renewal. And that's, you know, you can't do that as a mom and pop, you know. So we've watched it kind of evolve, and now here we are in Arkansas, and it's like in its nascent stages, like we were back in Colorado in 2012 and 2014. So it's interesting. I'm really interested to see how it evolves here in my home state.
Yeah, and you know, I've had minimal involvement basically from, you know, coming out to the farm and then seeing a refinery in
the refinery.
OKC. Yep. Mm-hmm. But it's not what a lot of people would envision as, you know, just kids in their basement putting together this, stuff. This is a high tech industry.
Yeah, I mean, we're real really scientists. Yeah, and we have compounding pharmacists on staff, and we run everything through the doctors. And for the pet products, we try to get everything vet approved, and we try to do the right thing. You know, we really want to help.
So break the industry down for me. It's a little bit complex. It's kind of hard to wrap our minds around, I think, as the layperson, as a person just kind of looking from the outside in. And a lot of people, there's still a stigma with the industry. But if you break it down to not just dollars and cents, but kind of practical, like, how does the industry come together?
So before my grandmother died last year, she, you know, questioned me a whole lot about the same thing. You know, like, break this down for me, Brad. I just don't know. So I think the easiest way to do that is to first do that clear draw the line between hemp and marijuana. It's still cannabis. It's still part of the same family. It still has a lot of the same medical benefits. But, you know, there is that line there. The legalities of hemp is a little bit easier to regulate through. And, you know, marijuana is marijuana. It's going to be highly regulated.
So just real briefly, what's the difference from hemp
So the one thing that qualifies me to grow a hemp crop versus a marijuana crop is the 0.3% THC threshold. So if I break the 0.3% THC threshold, I'm in marijuana. If I am below 0.3% THC, I'm in hemp. I have hemp farms, and you know, compliance is always, you know, top priority on those farms. You've got a lot counting on that analytics. So cannabis, it has cannabinoids. There are many, many, many cannabinoids, and each cannabinoid has a different medical benefit. But let's think of it like a chain. If you pull on a chain, you know, it's a chain, right? It's all together. It works. If you start breaking the links up and taking one link out of that chain, the chain no longer works. And cannabinoids are very similar. You know, they like to be together, and they work really well together as a medicine. The moment you start breaking it apart, they don't really work as well together. They call it the entourage effect. It was actually coined by Sanjay Gupta and Dr. Russo, actually, out of Seattle. Both coined the entourage effect back in the, you know, 2010, 2011, somewhere in there.
Interesting. I like to think of sort of the way it all works and the different strains and all this kind of stuff, like apples. You go to the grocery store, you've got a bunch of different types of apples. Each apple tastes a little different. If you don't know anything about them, you're not going to know which one you like better, which one's better for applesauce versus apple pie or whatever. So is that kind of how...
Well, having grown a lot of apples for Gerber Foods, like, that's a great analogy. So yeah, you have the eating apples, you have the processing apples for applesauce or food baked products, and then you have like the apples for apple juice, right? They are all very different, yes. And cannabis is very similar to that.
What's the difference in certain types of cannabis or like how does it work differently, kind of like sour apples versus sweet apples?
Okay, so it's back to that cannabinoids, right, and the different ratios of those cannabinoids. So really what it comes down to what's called an end-use science. You have to breed a plant to get the cannabinoid structures that help the condition on the back end. So for instance, if you have a child with epilepsy, the last thing you want to do is go to Colorado and buy a bunch of indica that's really high in THC to give to that child. It's the wrong medicine, right? Whereas if you have a PTSD soldier coming back from Afghanistan, he might really benefit from some of that. Or if somebody's coming off an opioid, he might really benefit from some of those higher THCs. So you really have to look at the plant, look at what it's producing, and see how you can use it in the medical field.
All right, now let's walk through the process. How do we go from a seed to a plant that has the right makeup to a finished product? Walk me through kind of how that whole thing
very goes. Very, very long and complicated. And the main reason for that is you've got an industry that's based off of genetics in a basement. So in, you know, the Hemp for Victory back in the 30s, you know, they had all this hemp, and a lot of it was for medicine. Some of it was for rope. Some of it was for, you know, but they had all this medicine that they were making back then out of it. And then they banned it. Well, when they banned it, you know, everybody went to their indoor basements, you know, back 40s, you know, wherever they could get away with it and not be criminally prosecuted for it. So over the years, they kind of changed the genetics so that they worked better in a basement setting or a bedroom setting or a closet, you know. Short little plants that, you know, produced exactly what they wanted. So now here we have this industry kind of opening up, and we're basically left with that breeding program. And we really, what we find is that there's so much genetic variability when we crack seeds that you have to do what's called a pheno hunt. So let's say, for instance, I crack 100 seeds. I got 100 seeds in a greenhouse, and I'm cracking them, and I'm seeing what's in them. And I pick one out of that 100. The rest of those 99 just kind of go away. They don't have what I'm looking for, but that one might have what I'm looking for. So then that one gets, you know, pruned, treated real well, goes into a cloning program. We produce a mass of the clones, and then from there we start our breeding. And that really allows us to dial in exactly which cannabinoids that plant's going to produce that we're looking for, and with the growth habits that we really want for whatever growing environment. Because sometimes you're going to put it indoors or greenhouse, and then, of course, if it's hemp, it needs to be able to sustain the outdoor heat and pests and diseases and everything else. So from that, we take our flowers, and you know, for the dried, the floral industry, for the flower industry, we dry and cure really, really slow so that it's a nice smokable product. And then for the extraction portion of it, we take what's left or even some of those top buds, and we start extracting either using ethanol or CO2 or even butane can be used as a solvent, and we pull all that oil off. And then we roto-evaporate off anything that's left over and get all the impurities out of it. There's actually some chemistry techniques that we can use to really clean up the oil and make sure there's nothing in there but the medicine that we want. And then that oil or that extract can now be used in a number of different products. For instance, you know, we do a sunblock and a salve and dog treats, you know, out of the hemp. And then on the THC side, we do vape pens and gummy bears and, you know, your typical thing.
So now that we've got this raw product, talk me through the process of what you do to turn the oil and that raw product into your finished products. Is this something that happens in a processing lab or facility? How do we get there?
So yeah, it's very much a processing lab. It's very much a clean room. So we try to make sure that when we're processing that there's, you know, no dust, it's super clean, every hair on your body is covered. We don't want to have any of that kind of stuff in our product. We make sure everybody wears gloves. Especially right now with COVID and everything, it's really important to wear your face mask and your gloves as you're working with these products. And PPE is super important in the lab, obviously.
And that's always been the case.
That's always been the case.
Not just a COVID thing.
It's not just a COVID thing, yeah, but it's always the case. And anytime you're selling stuff to the public, you want to make sure that you're giving them, you know, the quality every time. And that's one of the things that really sets me apart here in Arkansas is we have a lot of guys in the cannabis industry, or starting to get in the cannabis industry here, and they're really looking at quantity more so than the quality. I really want to be that guy that everybody knows in the state as, yeah, that's the quality.
And not all CBD is created equal.
Not all CBD, not all THC, not any cannabinoid is created equal. That is correct.
How do we determine or know good quality, bad quality, good grower, bad grower?
Well, unfortunately, labeling requirements aren't quite there. Now, we've tried to do a really good job with our products to make sure that we put the ingredients in there, let everybody know exactly what we do. We have a story behind most of every product. And I always feel, I never release something until I feel good about it. Until I'm ready to give it to my mother, I'm not going to release it, right?
So it's a good qualifier.
Right. So I really look at all of those things to make sure that our quality's right, that the product's right, before we ever get out there. Now, I've seen a lot of people, they'll order isolates from China. Who knows how pure that stuff is, if it's really good, how much filler's in it. And then they're just making, you know, their CBD products and selling it. Probably a lot more of their products than I am, all over the United States. They have a great sales team. They don't have a great, and a lot of quantity, but they don't have a good quality product. And anytime, back to that chain of the cannabinoids, anytime you try to break those links off, you're going to lose some of the medical benefits of that medicine. Or for instance, I've got family members that are pilots, and they're real worried about, they won't take anything that I give them because they're, oh no, if I test for THC at all, I'm done. Okay, I totally get that. So there are some uses for the isolate, but you just don't get the same benefits from just using the isolate. I believe in the whole plant medicine, and keeping it full or broad spectrum is what we call it. Full spectrum being that first pass, it's like the first squeeze out of the plant, and then further refining it to a broad spectrum to kind of remove some THC, get the CBD where we want it. That's really the best medicine out there. Once you go to isolate, not all isolate is even created equal, and that's something that I'm actually working down in Arizona to help a really large company streamline the supply chain of a CBD isolate, because they found after buying stuff off the market, nothing was the same. The quality just wasn't the same. And it should be, but it just wasn't.
So how do we get there? How does the quality become consistent and the same? Is that obviously not an easy process, but is it a manageable process?
So we're still in that transition from the garage, right? I mean, as we move and really get the right companies involved in this industry, I think we're going to see that evolution. We're going to see the regulators come in and actually say, okay, this is how we want to see it. This is how we want it extracted. This is how the consumables need to be. And once that's laid out, it'll just be the roadmap for us to follow. And I think we're really looking forward to it in the industry in a lot of ways. I mean, nobody wants more regulations, but in the end, it's going to help the industry, and that's really what it's about. So
we've got a complex industry with mad scientists and PhDs in, you know, agriculture industries kind of out there consulting and growing and putting this stuff out to market. If you look at it and take the word cannabis or marijuana or whatever you want to call it out of it, it's a very well-run professional science behind.
There is so much science. I think a lot of people don't realize how much science we really put into this. What we really lack in the industry, and luckily enough, I'm with a group that has this, is that upper management, that real business acumen that gets you to the next level as a company. And without those people, you know, it's just another grower in a basement again, you know? So luckily I'm with a good group that has that structure, has that acumen. I have an investment group behind me that believes in this and believes that this is the right medicine. It's been really interesting to watch the evolution of even the investors and how they've learned the industry.
Back pain, all these things that people live with, sometimes chronically, sometimes they're isolated events. We go to the doctor, doctor prescribes a medicine. Sometimes it's an opioid, we get hooked on the opioid. Is there any kind of long-term, big picture relief that CBD products can help with some of that? And is the medical community afraid of that?
I think there's always going to be a place for the pharmaceutical community and the right medicines, right? I think opioids will probably always be used and will always be needed in some way or another. I think we've overprescribed them. And I've had a lot of people actually come to me personally and go, hey, I need some products to help me get off these pain pills. I just can't seem to kick the habit of them. And the pre-rolls and some of the THC products have really helped those people get off of those. And I think the medical marijuana program here in Arkansas has the potential of really helping Arkansans kind of break that opioid cycle. You know, is the medical community worried about it? I would think they would be more excited. It's another tool in the toolbox. You know, the endocannabinoid system is a very amazing system. We have our own system to take care of these problems in our body. This plant, all it does is activate that system. By activating those internal processes, really allow, I think, the doctors to have another tool in the toolbox.
There's still a stigma with the cannabis industry, for sure. I think a lot of the country has sort of accepted it, but there's still a lot of people that this should not be a thing.
Right.
And obviously certain states are still struggling with that on their own right, and then there's the medical use versus the recreational use. There's so many reasons why this is sort of a stigmatized industry still.
Yeah, we could sit here all day and go through the conspiracy theories. But, you know, when it comes down to is there is a stigma. The war on drugs was a total failure. There should have never been a drug in the war on drugs. I think we could have completely eliminated the importation of all those drugs back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s by allowing cannabis to be in the market. But it wasn't, and here we are. And now we've got to move forward with that. So the stigma, that's a really hard one, and that's been a tough one for my family too, because my family has been, you know, they've got great jobs and they're not ever going to take anything that's illegal ever. And a lot of my family grew up believing that marijuana was a drug. And when they found out that I was in the cannabis industry, I had to kind of, well, this is hemp. This is for horses, this is for dogs, this is for people, and then you have marijuana, you know? And so you had to really break it down for these guys to get them to understand that, hey, this isn't gonna get you high. This isn't gonna alter your mind. This is just gonna relax your shoulders, or this is gonna take that ankle pain away. Or if you've got a horse, hey, go ahead and use this on its knees. You know, we've got great horse products. So that's, you know, you start breaking that stigma when you see those kinds of things happen. But to really help people, then you have to really look at it and try to break that stigma and use the plant for what it's here for.
The industry is getting bigger. A lot of money behind it.
A lot of money behind it.
Fortune 500 companies trying to get their piece of that money in industry and innovation and new products to market. How big does this thing go? I mean, the alcohol industry obviously is huge. We've got
right.
huge players
right.
Running the biggest Super Bowl ads back when we had football pre-COVID. And
NASCAR just jumped on the cannabis wagon as well, and they're going to start allowing some advertising. We were just in some meetings out there for that. How big does it get? Well, there's two different sides of that coin. You've got, you know, the alcohol comparison and the recreational marijuana. And I think there's a, you know, tax revenue is huge from something like that. And I think every state needs to look at that option from, you know, legalizing recreational and putting it right in line with alcohol would be great for our tax revenue. From a medical standpoint, and from just a overall population health standpoint, not just for people, but for our livestock and our food sources, I see cannabis in the endocannabinoid system really providing a lot more benefits than we've really given it credit for. And I think what you're going to see over time as we get more and more cannabinoids into our system consistently, maybe through a beverage or an edible or, you know, everyday consumables, we might have, start to have some of these cannabinoids added. We might see lower inflammation. We might see lower anxiety and lower stress rates in people. Maybe heart attacks will go down. Maybe strokes will go down. We don't know. We weren't allowed to really look at this for so long, and this is the first time we're really getting able to put the science behind it. But everything that I've seen and everything that I've really witnessed with my own eyes is that there has been nothing but good that has come out of this. Down to feeding our cattle hemp seeds or feeding chickens hemp seeds. So now the cannabinoids are in the meat and are part of the whole food supply and the food chain system. I think you're going to see a benefit in human populations from consuming that. I think you're, you know, hey, a happy cow is a happy cow. It's going to taste better, you know? And if it's fed right and is happy, then it's always going to be a better steak. And I think the same is true for chicken and plants and anything, right? So the more we can get the cannabinoid in our food supply, the better we're going to all be.
And again, that's just biological science.
That's just biological science. The endocannabinoid system, it's everywhere. And this is the only plant that has cannabinoids.
So if we were to somehow marry the benefit of that with another plant that doesn't have stigma associated with it, there wouldn't be an issue, right?
Right. You know, there's a lot of comparisons with hops and stuff like that. There are, I think there's some cannabinoids in hops, and there's some crops that have, you know, very limited, but there's nothing that compares to cannabis on the cannabinoid concentrations and production. And being able to pull that out of a crop and supply it to the population in general, I think you're just going to see benefits. I don't think there's really anything negative that's going to come from that.
All right. Talk to me about some of the players in the industry. Every industry has big players on a national level, international level. I mean, are there certain people setting the standards around the country from a company standpoint or industry leaders, thought leaders, people that you pay attention to? Obviously, you're consulting with a lot of these companies. So
yeah, I have a lot of mentors, and some of these guys are incredibly smart guys. And they've been in the cannabis world for a long time as well. But as far as the companies go, you know, we had a big push by some really big Canadian companies to really build up their stock prices and try to make it go bigger and bigger. You know, Anheuser-Busch was bought by Constellation, and Constellation owns some very large grows, probably the biggest in the world up in Canada. And they've got some roots here in the United States, but it's been a little different to get established here in the United States than it was in Canada. But as far as the real big runners, we're still waiting. We're still waiting for the big guys. We really are. Nobody's really come out and clearly been a leader with quality. There's been some good ones for quantity, but I've yet to see the right quality coming out of some of these bigger operations.
And now there's also industries being created around the cannabis industry, such as my friend Elizabeth Michael, that is a principal with Bud Agency, marketing specifically to...
Marketing is huge in the cannabis. It's a whole different kind of marketing, it seems, yeah.
And then you've got Dan Rodo with Abaca that's doing fintech for, and the financial piece is an interesting world.
If you want to, you know, really streamline the process and have a good regulated environment to work within, then we need to get the feds involved a little more and start allowing trade and start doing more banking and investments, and everything else just needs to open up at this point.
So what is the issue there? If I didn't know anything about it, tell me about, like, why is there an issue financially?
It's still federally illegal. So it can't, you know, none of your money can be FDIC.
Yeah. So basically, if I go to a dispensary that's selling CBD and I pay $50 for something, that $50 can't go into an FDIC insured bank. Is that
as far as I understand? No, still no. There are banks that are allowing some banking, so we are allowed to take cards. I don't think we can take credit cards yet. I think it's still just debit. But I'm not the finance guy.
Understood. All right. So being a leader in this industry, somebody who is constantly looking at what can we do new and different and innovate, but it's a new industry to begin with. So there's a lot of people out there that have similar thoughts. How do you streamline those things? How do you work with other people in the industry and create a more streamlined process and allow the industry to move forward working within the federal regulations?
So a lot of that is just the throughput, right? It's supply chain and throughput. If the demand's there, then we have to increase our throughput of the processing facility. Right now we have the ability to take care of basically ourselves and our farms and our gardens and maybe a few others, but we don't have, especially in Arkansas, we just don't have the infrastructure for, you know, farmers that want to grow CBD hemp flower to go take it to a large scale processor and it be efficient and the pay actually work out right. I mean, I think everybody lost money last year in the hemp industry. The ones that won were just really survivors more than anything, or they were breaking the rules just openly. And we don't do that. We try to fit right in those regulations and be super compliant because I don't want any ripples. You know, I'm right where I need to be. I don't need any ripples. So, but we've watched it happen in the industry where people just are blatantly ignoring the law so that they can turn a profit. And then others that try to play by the rules end up losing. But last year was a weird year. You know, the 2018 farm deal kind of blew the hemp out of the water. I mean, I've been growing hemp since 2014 out in Oklahoma, and to come to Arkansas last year and grow for the first time, it was, you know, under the 2018 farm bill was just a little crazy.
So walk me through that. What was the issue there?
So actually, Arkansas didn't comply with the 2018 farm bill. They still were going to comply under the 2014 farm bill under a pilot research program. So when we applied for the hemp licenses here in Arkansas, we kind of followed the same practice as we did in Oklahoma, where we were looking at different genetics, genetics that would be better for processing, pest and disease resistance to reduce fungicide loads, and then, you know, just kind of dialing all of that in.
This industry has to have a workforce, and finding people with experience and qualifications to do what you need them to do. There's not a long list of people with resumes that date back 15, 20 years that you can draw major experience on.
Well, it's even more complicated than that because the experience that we do have come from dry weather. And you come down here to Arkansas, and it's a whole nother growing environment. I remember when I was in college, Dr. Kurt Rome, one of the best professors up at the University of Arkansas, told me, he goes, "Well, bud, it's Arkansas. Everything grows well here, including your diseases and your weeds and the bugs, and everything grows well here." And he's right. You know, everything does grow well here. Arkansas is the most challenging place, in my opinion. Now, I haven't tried Alabama or Florida yet, but Arkansas, in my opinion, is one of the hardest places to try to grow. The humidity's high. The bugs are really thick here. The weeds grow as fast as the crop. It's a real challenge. It's a real challenge.
What's next on the big goals list? How do you measure what you want to do next? How do you grow the business? Where you take it?
So next, I mean, we're waiting on our dispensary license. We're hoping that gets issued, you know, very, very soon. And then the gloves come off. We're off to the races here in Arkansas for the dispensary. I do have some consulting to do with some cultivators here in Arkansas to try to improve their quality. I have some very big things going on out in Arizona and Nevada for very large scale production for, again, back to like Constellation type of companies, and just the development, the overall development of really my strains. I'm trying to develop strains that are adequate for, you know, different kind of conditions or different kinds of production. You know, what I produce for smoke isn't the same thing I'm going to produce for oil. What I produce for a horse is definitely not the same thing I'm producing for a PTSD soldier. So I'm really dialing in those strains. I think right now my seed bank's up to about 200 varieties that have already been hunted and found, really dialed in.
You mentioned seed bank. You obviously take your seeds and you grow them. Is that something you also sell to other growers? Is that something, how does that work within the industry? Does everybody develop their own strains, their own seeds? Are you working to get those consistencies built out and become known for certain things?
There are definitely some leaders in the seed industry, and we're right up there with a lot of them. We're trying to develop different strains for different conditions, like I said, and it's not just seeds, it's clones as well. We had a big contract with Easy Clone this year. They're a national company under Grow Life. I think their trade name on the market is POT, P-H-O-T, I think is what it is. It's kind of funny. But we had a big contract with them. We produced clones for them, but the clone market wasn't there. There wasn't a whole lot of farmers buying this year. And I don't think, you know, most of the farmers around here are still kind of row crop minded and agronomic. And this isn't an agronomic crop just yet, unless you just want to grow rope. And we do have some of those crops as well. We have a really great rope crop going right now in Lake Village, Arkansas, with a very large row crop farmer. But when it comes down to it, most of this is produced on a horticultural basis. You know, it's a hort crop. So we're taking clones and we're trying to do, you know, 500,000, a million clones, and then go take a transplanter and put it out in the field. And the reason why is because that plant's already been hunted. It's already been analyzed for compliance. We don't have to worry about genetic instabilities. We know exactly what we're putting out. And that's the route we've chosen to go right now. Now, there are some auto flowers being developed that are kind of interesting, and that's a much more row croppable kind of thing. We are looking at combine harvest this year on some crops to see how that can be done and how drying is going to be affected by cutting the crop that way. That will never be a smokable product. That will only be an extractable product. And then we still have, again, back to, you know, the top of the cream of the crop, the top of the top, will always be, you know, stem dried correctly, 60 degrees, 60% humidity, you know, all the right conditions, and just dial in exactly what we're looking for.
And that's all grown indoors, highly controlled environment.
Yeah, most of the smokables grown indoors, highly controlled environment. There are some of the hemp products that we have that come out of the field, but they have to be a certain kind of field. We can't have dirt roads around it. I don't want dirt in my product. You know, there's got to be zero sprays. I don't believe in smoking pesticides and herbicides. You know, once it's extracted, I can clean a lot of that up, you know, so it's not near the same issue. But when it comes to the raw flower, I want to make sure it's done right.
How do you stay motivated in an industry like this that's constantly changing, constantly being adapted, and you know, everywhere you turn, I'm sure there's another roadblock that you have to work around?
Most people tell me they can't keep up with my pace. And most people that work with me go, okay, I need a break. You know, I just don't ever have breaks, I don't think. My mom tells me all the time I work too hard. Moms are good at that, yeah. You know, I really don't know. I just wake up in the morning and I know my end goal is to get that dispensary license going in Arkansas, and my end goal is to make sure my THC farms in Oklahoma are far superior to anybody else's, and my end goal is to make sure I've got revenue coming in from these consultant agreements all over the country to make sure my guys are paid. You know, I'm more worried about my employees than I am me ever. But that's, you know, that's what I wake up in the morning and think about before I think about anything is, you know, what do we got to do to make sure everybody's going to get paid, make sure everybody's better today than they were yesterday. And that's my drive every day.
Well, and I think just to segue into our current state of affairs, you know, here we are, July of 2020, and a lot of business owners, that's their mentality. A lot of industries, a lot of people have been hit hard. And of course, a lot of people have lost their work. There's been certain subsidies that have helped people out. But from a business owner perspective, a lot of people are going through that right now. And there's a lot of mental challenges that I know a lot of people are dealing with. And, you know, has that something you've been affected with? Is there a challenge?
We haven't, to be honest, until I come to Little Rock, I don't even know that COVID exists. I don't watch the news. I don't listen to news on the radio. I'm always on the phone, or I'm just driving from one farm to another. We've kind of lived in a little bubble throughout all of this, you know. I mean, it was right in the middle of planting season, you know. We had outdoor crops to get out, and you know, it's just been kind of crazy. But, you know, we've got 50 milligram CBD elderberry gummy bears. Great for, you know, if you do get sick, what a great product to take. We're looking at maybe doing some vitamin D additions to some of those, because we've heard that, you know, vitamin D is very beneficial for COVID. And I do believe that CBD, you know, we're still waiting on some of the science on it, but I do believe CBD has some effects on getting your endocannabinoid system to help you fight that virus. So I think our industry is sitting at the top right now of the COVID crisis, because I think we have the ability to really be able to help without having to go through, you know, human trials of a vaccine and all that. We have the ability to actually help people right now.
So we're not saying it's proven,
right?
But we're saying take your CBD.
Take your CBD. It ain't going to hurt you.
That's right.
It's like the same thing with elderberries, right? It's not going to hurt you.
So walk me through some of the products, because and the brands that you guys represent, because I know you've got holding company, multiple brands underneath that.
Yeah, so we're a completely vertical integrated company, and we have a hemp division, and we have a THC division, and then we have an Arkansas dispensary, and then we have a delivery company that we're hoping the Medical Marijuana Commission will approve in the next couple of weeks. So we've got quite a few things going on, and then I have got what I focus on the most really is indigenous seeds, and that's my genetics and strain company. We do most of our development of the strains out in Oklahoma because of regulatory issues. And then, and I can do THC there, you know, in open air out there. So it works out pretty good. And then, as we move into different states, you know, we really look at what the market needs and which ones to really focus on from there.
So talk me through the rest of the brands that you're...
Yeah. So the brands really, we have Hogs Hemp brand,
and that's Hogs, all THC. I'm sorry, no, non-THC.
Non-THC CBD. Hogs Hemp Farm is a farm up by Morrilton. We've got about 60 acres. I think we got 30 acres planted this year. Greenhouses and a refinery on site. That's Hogs Hemp Refinery. And it does dog treats and horse salves and horse treats and sunblocks and human salves. And then we do some pre-rolls out there. And right now, the ones that are really moving are the sunblocks, the horse salves, and the dog treats seem to be the big winners right now.
Talk to me about the sunblock, because that's kind of intriguing to me that we have CBD sunblock. What's the benefit there?
Your skin will feel amazing. That's for sure. So we gave a bunch out to some people that were going to go camp out on the Buffalo River for 3 days. And we all know how burned you're going to get in a canoe on the Buffalo River. First of summer, you know, you haven't had that first summer burn yet. So we gave some to some people and they put it on and they came back and I think they were whiter than when they left. And I was like, wow, that stuff really worked. Or did you even go? And they were like, that stuff really works. And I was like, well, it's a sunblock. It's not a sunscreen, you know? And that was really just the goal. You know, I wanted something for my skin and my kids to be able to put on them before they go swimming that's waterproof and safe for them and all organic. And I can look at the ingredients and know that it's not something I can't pronounce as a chemist, you know. It's just the simplicity of the product makes it so good.
And there's a lot of conversation right now around sunscreen and some of it, how harmful it is for you and things like that. So is this a positive in the advancement of sunscreens?
Yes, we went back in technology. You know, when you're talking about cocoa butter and coconut oil and a little bit of zinc oxide, I mean, we kind of went back to the stuff your mom put on your nose, but we made it so that you can, it spreads, it dries, it doesn't, you know, make your nose wide anymore. And it works really, really well.
So that's Hogs Hemp brand?
Yes.
And I need to look for that.
You do. Where? So Hogs Hemp Refinery online. We have an online store. You can buy any of the Hogs Hemp products there that are grown right there just out in Birdtown, Arkansas, just outside of Morrilton.
H-A-W-G?
That's H-A-W-G. That's right. So it's an old hog farm, right? So we had an old hog farm. We've got a mascot you got to come out and see pretty soon. Her name's Birdie for Birdtown, Arkansas. she's, I guess, about 5 months old now and probably weighing in at about 180, 190. And she's just a sweetheart. And so she got real burned. She's white and black. And so she gets real burned on the pink parts. And so we go out with our sunblock and we put sunblock on her. And she just loves it. And then we give her, we've made her some CBD treats to try to see how she likes them, and she loves them. We use a lot of our stalks from the field, and we grind them up for her bedding. And it's just a great place.
Speaking of CBD treats, dog treats. So our pets are benefiting from CBD as well?
Yeah. So we even took some of our dog treats and sent them over to some vets that we were friends with and went through the recommended dosing, because we started looking in the market and we were like, that just seems really high for a dog, you know, and that's just, and then we realized, hey, they're not giving them full or broad spectrum medicine. They're getting them isolate. So we started really playing with the full spectrums and the broad spectrum refined oils and adding it to a cod liver oil, which is really good for skin anyways. And we infused it in the cod liver oil and started making these treats. And we realized that dogs that had anxiety would just sleep through their stress. And dogs that had back pains were acting like they were puppies again. And it's been really cool. It's been a really cool process to watch the animal products really take off.
So if my dog's scared of thunderstorms.
Lightning.
Give them a little CBD-infused dog bone and...
helps them a lot.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful brand. Shout out to our friend Arlton. Few, beautiful design work.
Great job. Few has been excellent to work with. Always has been excellent to work with. This isn't even the first company that I've worked with Few with. They've done branding for several of my companies. As an entrepreneur, I've gone through a couple of different branding exercises with Few, and I can't draw a decent stick man. You know, I can't, I have no artistic ability at all. I mean, people ask me all the time, what do you want this to look like? And I'm like, I have no idea. That's just not my deal, you know?
Yeah.
Art didn't choose me, the plant chose me.
I love that. And of course, buddy Zach Hill, also a Titan on the show. Yeah. So I appreciate him being here. All right. I want to run through a few little quick hit questions I like to ask everybody. First is, what's your favorite or latest book you've read or listened to? Are you a big reader? How do you obtain new knowledge?
I mean, I read. I don't really read books. I read scientific studies.
Okay.
So I'm not like the person that lays in bed at night and reads a novel. No, I've got way too much going on to sit down that long.
Yeah.
But I'll run through some scientific papers and kind of look at research, and that's really what I spend my time reading about. What's my favorite one lately? I've been really intrigued by, you know, different types of extraction. So I've been really reading into the different types of extraction that we can look at that aren't on the market right now, and trying to develop something there that's a little safer. Some of the extraction processes can get a little tricky and can be, you use some pretty volatile chemicals sometimes in the extraction process, and I think there's some ways that we can get around that, and I've been reading a lot about that.
You're a data guy.
I'm a data guy.
Analytics guy. So you're reading for the numbers, for the entertainment.
That's it.
I love it. Daily routine. What do you have to do every single day? Are you a wake up and go exercise kind of person? Are you
coffee? I swim a lot. Yeah. I swim a lot. My kids, you know, are getting into swimming. I actually just taught my middle child the other day how to swim, so that was great. Took the floaties off. I'm working on my 3-year-old now. I'm going to get him. By the end of summer, he's going to be swimming like a fish, and he's almost there. My daily routine really is just my family and my children, you know? I mean, I spend as much time with them as I can before I leave for work. And then when I get home, I turn my phone off the best I can and focus on them. I love to cook with the family. And so we'll go out by the lake and we'll cook and swim. And almost every night I'm swimming.
Nice. Now, are you cooking with CBD as well? Is that a additive to, can I cook with that?
You can, but the heat just degrades it so much. It's just not going to be the same.
Good to know. All right. What's a relatively new habit that you formed? What's something you found yourself doing these days that you either from getting older, because I know I look at myself and I'm like, am I turning into my dad?
Or right.
Is there anything beneficial that you've added to your daily routines lately?
Daily routines, you know, my wife works out every day, every day. She's like a bodybuilder. You know, I try to just keep up with her. I try to cook something good every day. You know, I mean, there's something about just getting everybody at the table. I think that's something that's been lost in so many families, and that's something I've really, really tried to focus on with the kids.
Love that. If you were to write a book or an article and publish it, what would what would it be titled? What's
I'm working of, on it, and yeah, I'm working on it. I've got a really interesting story in the cannabis world and how it kind of evolved from the 90s and where I am today. And I'd love to share that story with people. I think it would be, you know, I talk to people all the time that they kind of followed similar paths with me. Like one of my, you asked me earlier, you know, about some of the, my influences in the industry. And one of them is a really good friend of mine who's an astrophysicist from Raytheon, who's now one of the biggest cultivation guys in Colorado. He quit, you know, Raytheon and went and started running his own gardens. And then I came over and consulted with him. And we've done a lot of really large scale design work. And he said, man, you ought to write a book based on everything that's gone on in your life. You know, I mean, everything that you've seen in this, you know, he's like, you're the one that's been all over the country. One of my friends that I grew up with is a publisher over at Discovery Channel, and he's like, let's do a documentary, you know, like a, and I was like, man, they already kind of have that, but you know, let's do something different, like a string hunters here in Arkansas, right?
Love it, love it. So you cook a lot. Do you have a favorite food or favorite dish that you're always making or going to?
Cassoulet is my favorite dish to cook. It takes all day.
For the special occasions. All right, and what about music? You're driving to the farm, got some music on the radio. What are you listening to?
Oh gosh, I don't know. I'm not really an artsy music kind of person. But I mean, I like everything. I'm so eclectic when it comes to music. I like it all.
All right. How can people find out more about the brand? How can they get involved with what you've got going on?
Well, definitely Hogs Hemp Refinery for here in Arkansas, and people outside of Arkansas can order. We can ship. As a matter of fact, we just had our first international shipment not too long ago to Italy, so that's pretty cool. It's hemp, so it can be shipped. It can, you know, it complies with all the regulations. When it comes to the THC, if y'all, anybody's over in Oklahoma, please look for, you know, some of the brands out there. Ganja Buds is the biggest one that we associate with and that I grow for out there in Oklahoma. You know, in the West Coast, there's several brands that I've consulted with. But I would have to say, you know, the Nevada market has the most of my stuff in it. And then here, for THC in Arkansas, look for Green Remedies Dispensary to open up pretty soon. I have a feeling, we're going to give these guys a run for their money in this industry.
I love it. Well, Brad, thanks for being our Titan of Cannabis.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was fun.
Yeah.
If you liked this episode of Titans of Industry, head to contenttitan.co/podcast for more episodes or subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. And if you know of an industry titan that's doing amazing things, let us know on social media or through our website so we can tell their story. Thanks for listening.